listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have a wonderful musician, saxophonist, I should say woodwind player, because you also play the flute, right? And right. Singer and songwriter and composer, Mr. Woody Mankowski. Did I get them all?
Yeah, that's pretty dang good.
I should say Grammy Award winner. That's my bulldog, Rufus, that's about to enter in. What did you win the Grammy Award for?
Oh, I didn't get a Grammy.
Where I see a Grammy on your mantle.
That's my my father-in-law's Grammy. He won it for Shaft. He was the
that's amazing. He was what did he do for Shaft?
He was the engineer for that.
That's awesome. What an amazing session to be an engineer for. That's going to be my first question. Was he an influence on you wanting to be a musician?
Actually, I never met him, actually. It's my new wife's dad, who isn't with us anymore. He passed away probably in, 2013, I think it was. Is that what it was? 2006.
Oh, wow.
That's Christina.
Bro, you're off by 7 years. It's okay.
But yeah, he was head engineer at Stax Records.
Wow.
And so he recorded Otis Redding and he recorded.
You probably did some of Rufus. He probably did. All the Booker T stuff. He probably did as well, right? Aretha, some Aretha.
No. His name was Ron Capone. I can't really show him. But. Yeah, he was an engineer at Stax Records in the 60s, and then in the 70s he came to L.A. and he recorded Jeff Beck, and he recorded
– wow.
And he actually produced the Jeff Beck Orange album, and he produced Tower Power – which one was it? Bump City. Yes, Bump City.
Wow. So you got music all around you in some way or another. I love it. Let's talk about your story a little bit. So what was the moment of Zen that made you want to become a musician? Was it something you heard on the radio? Was it a family member that played an instrument? Was it a teacher?
It was probably just I started watching Hee Haw when I was really little. You know, Hee Haw, have you ever watched that?
Yep.
I mean, they had some great musicians, Roy Clark and Buck Owens was a great singer, and they had all the greats on there, you know, country music, and I was really a big fan of country music when I was small. You know, in fact, I started playing guitar when I was about 5 years old, and my first guitar was the red, white, and blue guitar that Buck Owens had.
Wow!
So, it was plastic, but. But then I ended up getting a real guitar a few years later, and I started taking piano lessons when I was about six. I played my first gig when I was 12.
What was it, a jazz gig, a rock gig? Like, what was it, a school band?
It was country, and I was playing guitar. And
that's awesome.
So I still play some guitar. I played guitar in this tour that I just did, but it's by far not my main instrument. Saxophone is my main instrument.
And I assume you still play keys, because I know a lot of saxophonists that love to play keys too, because it helps with arrangements for them to see kind of like all the intervals and everything. Whenever, so do you still play keys and arrange on keys?
I do. And I can play parts. I'm not a real improviser or anything. I mean, I'm not an improviser at all, but yeah, I can play piano. I just, I'm not a piano player.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, you are such a powerhouse on saxophone. I would assume it would just be able to translate a little bit, you know, on piano, but it's not the case with instruments. I can play solos on guitar, and it's like I really have to think about playing a solo on piano. So I understand that because I started with piano, but it's like I spent a lot more time playing guitar, and it just kind of you find what makes you kind of run easier with whatever it is in music. But you also start developing your voice. Did you sing in choirs? Were you singing in bands like as you grew up?
Well, I started singing when I was about 18 out of necessity. I had joined a band called Project 60s, and this was in about 1985. And so we were playing all 60s music, and they needed an extra singer. So I was singing backgrounds, and then they gave me a couple leads to sing. And I actually started getting more and more comfortable with it, and eventually pretty good, and they gave me a lot more songs. And and then I got a call from this friend of mine, Larry Darling, who was in the band Matrix.
Yeah,
them from the early 70s. Yep. Anyway, he was a jingle producer too, of sorts. I mean, that was one of the jobs he did. But he's a really great engineer now too. But anyway, and he's also a really great singer. And he hired me to do some singing on a jingle because they needed a different voice. And I couldn't believe that. That was the first jingle I ever sang, and I've sung over 500 of them now.
That's crazy. But, any famous jingles that I would know?
No, nothing famous. They're all mostly local jingles in the Midwest. But I did do a Miller Lite commercial, and I did one for Turner Classic Movies, and
that's awesome.
Benadryl, but yeah, it was like my learning process for vocals came from singing jingles, and all the people that I worked with were great singers, and you know I'd get little tips from everybody. And you know, eventually I just tried copying singers that I liked, like Marvin Gaye and Al Green, Sly Stone, and I mean, and Steve Winwood, and you know, people like that, Peter Gabriel. I just tried to get, I knew I had that in me. I had that sound.
Right.
And so I just had to learn how to control it, and I've gotten pretty good at it over the years, but it was never anything that I really worked at until I had to.
I'm surprised you wouldn't have listed Van Morrison as an influence, because he's like the sax vocalist that is probably one of the most prominent to do both and kind of do it in a way that kind of infuses jazz and rock and kind of like Americana and roots music in a way, you know?
Yeah, I'm more influenced by him as a composer, but yeah, he's a great, like, soulful singer, unbelievable. Yeah, I love his singing, and I just love his musicality. You know, all of it.
And you kind of grew up with Greg Koch, who's been a guest on Wake Up Hollywood before.
Yeah.
So did you guys meet in like middle school music programs, or like how did you guys first kind of hang out?
No, I met him in college because a friend of mine had worked with him in this group called the Kids from Wisconsin,
awesome.
And which is like a show choir that would play at the fairs around the state. Actually, it was not that. It was at the state fair. So they played at the state fair, and they had like a stage there that they played at, I think, every day. So it was like a almost like a Disney type of thing. So, anyway, my roommate was friends with Greg, who was in this thing, and they were both in it together. And So I got to know him, and I thought he was the funniest guy I'd ever met, for one thing.
And he is a very funny guy.
Yeah. So I just wanted to hang out with him because of that. You know, I knew he was a great guitar player, but I'd never really heard him. And then once I heard him, I was like, wow. I was kind of blown away by him. Yeah, well, he's always really been cool, great.
Anytime he plays in L.A., you always sit in with them, and it's just such a cool collaboration. And I had no idea you'd known each other for decades. That's just got to be a cool kind of thing that, like, feels like, you know, like an old catcher's mitt, that whenever you have a musical connection like that, that is still doing it after all this time, that when you guys collaborate, it's like you have those years of history. You know what I mean? You don't have that all the time in this industry. It's like people are just cycling in and out, and they're on tours. They're kind of like all over the place. So it must be cool to have that kind of like sense of youth in your a musical connection that, you know, you're now seasoned musicians. Like, how do you ever kind of collaborate on, like, what do you choose to collaborate on? Is it a song cover that you both love, or is it one of his songs, or a song that you recorded together? How does that kind of come about?
Well, I are both really big music fans, and fans of certain groups, and we know lots of their material, like, you know, the Allman Brothers and Cream and Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin. And so, I mean, I can't sing all the Led Zeppelin songs because that voice
so
can only go for so long. Yeah. But he and I have a really great, like, rapport, you know, as far as like just being able to make good music together, and luckily it happens a couple times a year. So, yeah.
And when did you kind of like really put the gas on saxophone? Were you in middle school, high school, when you kind of like really wanted to make it a serious thing?
Well, I had a teacher in high school named Jim Bergero, and he was an alto sax player, and he was a bebopper. And so he taught me, he told me who to listen to, and he made a tape of Charlie Parker, the Savoy recordings, you know, the master takes. And so I listened to that over and over again. And I guess I'm not normal that way. Like, I loved it. And I'm not sure everybody who would hear it would love it at first, you know. Like, and I just got it. Like, immediately I was like, this is what I should be listening to. This is what I should be working on, trying to sound like this guy, you know. But, and I never thought that I couldn't do it, is the thing, you know.
He's actually my favorite saxophonist, like, in the jazz world. I just feel like he's never played a wrong note. It's just always in the pocket. There's something about his rhythmic phrasing, his ideas. I think my favorite solo, I think, is Lady Be Good. I think that's the name of the song.
Yeah.
It has one of the most lyrical solos. And like the kind of the most amazing thing about it is they're playing, and it sounds like a studio recording, and he plays the most insane solo, and then you hear the audience start clapping, and it's just like even more remarkable that he does it live. So, I mean, as a saxophonist, I can't even imagine what kind of like inspiration that's going to give you to just kind of play. Did you learn, like, you know, the old jazz book, like, you know, the traditional bebop stuff, and then kind of go into the Coltrane stuff? Was he the next player that you kind of gravitated towards?
Well, I couldn't really do any of what Coltrane was doing until I got into college. So, I mean, with Charlie Parker, I could at least latch on to some of that, you know, but because it's more melodic than what Coltrane was doing. Coltrane was more, I guess, patterns oriented, at least the stuff that I could hear in my, you know, because I couldn't hear an album like A Love Supreme at that time. I was like, I don't get it. This is not for me yet.
Right.
But I kind of had a feeling I would be into it at some point. And of course, yeah, I was. Now that's probably my favorite one of all of them. And I transcribed every solo off of there. And wow. Yeah. And I mean, I've done a lot of transcriptions, and over the years. So that's helped my playing a lot too.
I have a random Charlie Parker question. I don't know if it's folklore, if it's real, but I know that he pawned a lot of his instruments because he had a heroin addiction. And yeah. A lot of people said that he did a lot of recordings on a plastic saxophone.
Yeah.
Do you know what recordings are? Can you hear when it's through a plastic saxophone versus when it's not?
I'm sure that stuff that he did on the plastic saxophone was like those Dean Benedetti recordings that are really poor quality, where he just recorded the solo and then that's it. You know, like all you get is the solo. You don't get the head of the song. You don't get any other solos. You get Charlie Parker's solo and that's it. But that, I think that's, some of those recordings have the plastic saxophone on it. And wow. The only reason he had it was because it was cheap.
Right.
And it wasn't because it sounded great. He could make it sound great. And I'm not sure, Ornette Coleman played one too, but I think he actually bought it because of the sound, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. Like there's an album cover with him with the plastic saxophone on it. I think it's Jazz, The Shape of Jazz to Come or something like that. I think that's what it's called.
I actually love talking music with saxophonists because saxophone's like one of my favorite instruments. And like Hank Mobley, Lou Donaldson, these are some of my most favorite saxophone players. Charlie Parker, Coltrane, of course, Ornette Coleman as well, Cannonball. I mean, there's just so many. But do you kind of gravitate towards kind of taking things from each player to kind of develop your own style and your own kind of like verbiage as a player? Or, you know, or do you kind of like take like none of the influences as far as licks and kind of develop your own as a player?
Wow. Well, I guess most of what I do, what I work on now anyway, I mean, the stuff that I play and what I work on are two different things, I think. I'm trying to take, from a little bit of whatever I can from all the great players that I've heard. You know, but it's that mostly comes from just listening over and over again until you get it. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, you have to understand it before you can play it. I think, you know, you can't just say, "Oh, I know what he's doing," and because this is what it looks like on paper. It doesn't sound anything like that. You know, when you hear Lockjaw Davis, the things that he plays, the phrasing that he uses and the different tonguing techniques that he's using, I mean, it's really unique and it's really hard to do. And I've only heard one other guy that can kind of copy his sound, and that's James Carter. But I don't know how I got sidetracked. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. No, I love, this is the kind of stuff I love, because it's like you just learn the process. For me, it's like, sometimes I'll learn an entire solo from a musician. Sometimes I'll learn a sax solo, and I'll learn it on a guitar, because Maceo Parker is probably one of the people I try to steal from a lot, because I just feel like he's like the most rhythmic player, and just it's so streamlined as to what he plays.
Yeah, the first time I heard him, I thought he sounded like he was playing drums on a saxophone.
Yes.
Which I really loved. He's so rhythmic.
Yep. All the stuff with James Brown, Life on Planet Groove, that stuff is like some of the heaviest saxophone playing.
And it really is.
And what's also cool, but what I love about your musicianship, you love all of the saxophone music that kind of also permeated into rock music, which is really, really rare among sax players, because I know a lot of sax players and they almost become like purist. We'll call it purist level of thinking of like, you know, there's jazz and then there's everything else. And you really love all of the stuff that has saxophone, like the Doobie Brothers and Michael McDonald and Steely Dan and some of that music that is just so great, which is the same as me. I love anything that uses instruments in a way that's so tasteful and musical that there are no lines when it's done well. You know what I mean? So I love that you also kind of take that mentality. When it comes to you writing music, how do you kind of choose what direction you want to go? And are you kind of taking influences from those same inspirations? Or are you kind of like feeding off of like, you know, what you want music to sound like now for you?
Well, yeah, I always have kind of a starting point. Like, you know, I'll be listening to somebody, you know, if I'm going to be composing a jazz composition, you know, I mean, I've got my favorite composers, you know, like if I'm listening to Horace Silver or something, then I'll try to write something like that. And it just makes it easier for me. But none of it ever turns out sounding like their music. It always sounds like new music, you know, but it's
like we reach for our heroes, but we always kind of end up somewhere else, and that's okay. That's what makes it unique and new.
That's totally true. Yeah. You end up somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, let's play something real quick. What do you want to play first? Your choice for the first song.
Oh, well, we don't have any of my jazz compositions ready to go. So listen to this song, Nothing But Your Love. Now, I should probably explain.
Yeah, please, because I saw the video and it's awesome.
Are you going to show the video?
Or, yeah, we show the video, yeah.
Okay. So during COVID, my friend Jeff Babko, who's a great piano player here in L.A.
Killing pianist.
Yeah. He and I decided to make an album together, and we got a really killer band together with Steve Ferroni on drums.
Wow. And I saw him in the video. I was like, damn, I've got questions.
And Ethan Farmer on bass, who is just a monster.
Like, killing player, too.
Plays with Lionel Richie's band. And then Shane Terrio on the guitar, who plays with Daryl Hall. He's Daryl Hall's musical director, so he's on Live at Daryl's House and Hall and Oates. So anyway, we recorded an album and we came up with this name. Well, I came up with the name Ebunctions is the name of the band. So I'm the lead singer, and Jeff and I share the composing credits. You know, some of the songs I wrote almost completely, but we still shared the writing credits because it just got so hard to tell who wrote what after a while that we were just like, oh, let's just do 50-50, which was fine with me. And anyway, the music turned out great. And this video, I mean, we always were trying to do something goofy, and Jeff and I definitely are goofy in this, but the song itself is really influenced by the writing of Marvin Gaye and let's see which one. Nothing But Your Love. Yeah, that's probably more Marvin Gaye than anything, but it doesn't sound like it, I don't think. You know, you'll have to check it out.
All right, what's the name of the song one more time?
Nothing But Your Love.
Here's Nothing But Your Love by the Ebunctions.
Like heaven to me, holding you and loving you is like a living.
A feel good jam, man. My goodness, that is awesome. That is a great video, very fun. Tell me what the concept behind the video was.
Well, the concept was Jeff Babko came up with the concept for that video. So he's like, we're gonna do this at my house, and we're just gonna do it all like green screen, you know, with the background and everything, and you know, he had the Fila outfit that we were all going to wear. So, I mean, it's so.
You guys need an endorsement deal from them after that video, you know?
Yeah, we should have.
No, it's just, and it's a great arrangement. The song is good. The solos are good. It's just slamming. It's just slamming. How did you kind of, you know, how did you not want to tour with this group? That must have been so hard to not do. You did a performance in a video and a recording, and then you just not, you know, everybody's on different tours. I get it, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was a weird time, you know? I mean, Steve Ferroni was the first one to be unavailable because he was going to go on the road with John Mayer.
Yeah, I remember that.
But he got COVID. And at that time, everybody was really afraid of COVID. They got a different drummer and who ended up being Questlove.
I remember.
So they just stuck with him, which it was really a bummer for Steve. But yeah, it was a weird time. You know, COVID messed up a lot of people's lives for a while.
I was just talking about it with Sam, our station owner. We used to have a studio, and then we started doing the shows remotely, and it's like everybody just kind of got used to doing the radio show remotely. It's like there's a convenience with it. It's like you're at home and we're still able to do the interview, and it's like it's hard to compete with that sometimes, you know. So it's also live shows. You know, I was talking about, we just play with Rebirth Brass Band, and they were saying the pandemic has changed their touring a lot, you know, because they don't go out as much because it's harder to get people in the seats, you know, because it's just, there's such a hard market. It's a hard market for musicians and entertainers after that. Like, it was something changed and shifted, but it'll come back. I think people are starting to get more adventurous again. But what an amazing project to just do when things are down. What a cool idea. And I hope you create more stuff with them. We're going to play another song by them. But tell me a little bit, like, how did the songwriting process go? Did somebody come in with an idea? Did you arrange stuff together? Were you and Jeff arranging stuff, you know, harmonies and kind of the arrangement for the band together?
Well, most of the songs started with the lyrics. And so I had lyrics written. I was pretty – lyrics were coming easily to me at that time. I mean, I just had a lot to write about because I had been through a divorce and stuff. So, I mean, a lot of the songs aren't about that, but it was just like I didn't have anything else to do. I was – you know, especially during COVID, you know, it was
pain is the fuel for inspiration. Right?
Yeah. I mean, it was a weird, weird time, but I ended up writing a bunch of songs and so just the lyrics. And so I took them to Jeff and he wrote the music to a bunch of them. But with that one, I think we both, like, I definitely wrote the chorus on that one, but he had the verses and the introduction, and it was like that. So we just, I you know, like I'd say, well, why don't we do this? You know, and we did this all over the computer too, like,
wow,
forth. So it took a while to write a song, but you know, by the time, like, if I gave Jeff the lyrics, you know, sometimes the next day he'd have the whole song done, and I'd be like, I'm just gonna change a couple of little things here and there, but he said, yeah, do whatever you want, and so. It turned out great, I think. But anyway, with that song, you know, I got to play a sax solo at the end of it. And it just really came naturally, you know, like I only fixed a couple things on that solo. So it's almost what you hear, you know, it wasn't a first take, but it was a early take.
But it's got like a Dan meets Doobie Brothers meets Chicago vibe and feel. It's just like all the feel good music of that time period is like kind of wrapped in this songwriting project or this, you know, recording project you guys have.
That's what we were shooting for.
Yeah, it's really got a good vibe. Like, just feel good arrangements. You know, it's like you don't have a lot of those now in pop music. So it's so great. I love when musicians kind of like push forward what arrangements can be, because, man, it just doesn't happen in the same way with pop music and music now, you know? Yeah. I wanted to talk, you know, Woody, you've had a pretty extensive and really, like, cool career recording and playing with the Doobie Brothers, one of your favorite bands, with Billy Gibbons, Cheap Trick, Chris Hind, Joe Walsh, you know. Tell me what that experience was like for you, because you grew up with all this music and now you're playing with these people. That's got to be just such a cool, cool feeling.
It was amazing. Yeah. I mean, and you just, it's different when you see these guys up close, you know, or, you know, whoever it is, you know, like when I saw Billy Gibbons, you know, he's the coolest guy.
Right.
You know, just like when he's playing this amazing solo, he'll be doing some weird little trick with his fingers, you know, like this. And then the other hand, he's like, you know, drinking a beer or something, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, he's like that. It's like, it's all show for him, even though he's playing all this amazing. He is a great musician.
Yes.
But my favorite musician of all of those guys is Joe Walsh. He may be my favorite musician, period.
Wow. That's like, awesome.
I saw him with the Eagles and he played this solo that, you know, I was like, it was just, you know, life changing solo that he played. And it was a long solo too. Like, I think it was, on In the City, you know, that song In the City by Eagles. And he just started playing this lick, and he just kept changing the chords and going farther and farther up the neck with it. And it was like this pattern that kept changing. And I was just like, this is so heavy. You know, he's like, he's a really great guitar player, man. And anyway,
but what I love about that too, it's like, and I know what you mean. It's like, there's like this fine line of when a musician can take technical ability and make it virtuosic, you know, it's like, and it's also tasteful and accessible. It's like this really small window when musicians can take all those things and kind of like make the voice heard in that way when they're soloing. And I know when a musician does it, it's one of the most captivating things. So I can imagine, you know, you listening to him and then playing with him. It's like, wow, this is what music's all about. I have a question about the Aretha Franklin recording or performance you did. Tell me what that experience was like.
I performed with her twice, and she was really nice. I mean, she just kind of showed up and did her thing and left, but she was very complimentary to the band and very sweet. And her musical director was H.B. Barnum, who's kind of a famous producer. I think he actually maybe had produced a couple of her albums, which is crazy because I didn't know that at the time, you know. But we just thought he was kind of a crabby guy. Like, he told our lead alto player that he better polish his flute before he comes to the gig tonight. You know, like,
what?
Just make sure that flute is shiny when you get here tonight.
Yeah. It's like, that's when it's like, maybe you don't know what you're doing when you're making those kind of orders. You know?
That's what we thought, but he does know what he's doing. So it's crazy. But
maybe he's throwing you guys off. Maybe he's trying to make sure you know, he throws off your scent. Well, let's play the next one. You were about to say something. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so yeah, Aretha is amazing, you know, and she sounded like she sounds. And it was like she just never wasn't amazing. You know what I mean? It was all, she was like a first take singer, even in live, you know?
Well, the reason I asked is like in so many magazines, they've rated her as the number one vocalist of all time. And it's like that, I mean, you just have to hear a voice like that and just, you kind of lose yourself. That must have been a pinch me moment on some level, just like playing music in her band with a voice that is, you know, that's going to be around for generations and generations just because of how she sings and what she kind of left the world with, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I loved her. And she was a big influence on me, huge. That album, 30 Greatest Hits, it was like a double CD. I just played that thing for like on repeat for months. Yeah, I was blown away by her. And there was an album, or not an album, but a 45 that I had when I was younger. I don't know what happened to it, but it was the song "You're All I Need to Get By" that she sang.
Yep.
And I would slow it down to 33 speed and listen to it, and it sounded like a guy, but like the best guy singer you've ever heard.
Wow. That's cool.
Really weird. But I learned a lot from that too, you know, like copying that.
Yeah, she had soul like just oozing out of her pores on every level. So I'm sure just being around that was an influence. Let's play the second song. What do you want to play next?
Well, you might as well play another Ebunction song. This is called "Running in Place," and this one was influenced by a Cameo recording that we were trying to copy the sound of. It doesn't sound anything like that, but the bass line was kind of like a Cameo type bass line, and the horn lines, I was trying to do what, you know, like Jerry Hay was doing on the Michael Jackson recordings, and the rest of the song, like, I don't remember right now. We'll have to listen to it, and then I'll probably have more comments for you afterwards.
I love it. Here's Ebunction with "Running in Place."
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
I love that there's great arrangements and great senses of humor intertwined in this. Tell me, first I want to ask, is Babko really playing trombone on this, or is it just...
Yeah.
Wow.
That was great.
Trombone, too. That's crazy.
Trombone player. And so, yeah, we had Jamie Havorka on trumpet, and then me on the tenor, of course, and then my friend Stephen Taylor on the Barry sax. Man, he's just got this... He's got the best timing and the best Barry sound ever. So
that's crazy.
I probably could have done the Barry parts myself, but I was just like, I want Steven.
Well, it's also nice to play in a section like that sometimes. You get a different kind of like tonality, intonation, attack, all those things. It just makes a difference, you know?
And watching that, I just realized what a great bass player Ethan is, Ethan Farmer. I was just blown away by him, man. He's so great.
Was that the first time you'd play with him?
Yeah. I mean, this album was. Yeah.
He was with Boyz II Men for a little bit, and then Lionel Richie. I think he kind of just jumped between those two, you know, from time to time. But he's just like one of the slamming cats. He's just always ridiculous.
Yeah. He's so good.
Well, the whole band, let's be honest, everybody in that band is a heavy hitter. So there are no slouches in that band. It's kind of crazy.
It was great. I really wish we could have toured. And I'm not saying we never will. I still kind of hold out a little bit of hope for that. And I mean, we probably have to do another album sometime, but I don't know how that's going to happen. That one was kind of heartbreaking because we put a lot of time and money into it, of course. And it just, you know, you said, we're going to do everything we can so that this isn't a fart in the wind. And it just kind of, there's nothing you can do. You know,
it's like, you know, part of creating something. I was actually just in a session and somebody said, you know, we're all gamblers. We're creating things and gambling with if people will like it or if people will hear about it or if it will do anything. And it's not about the content. It's about how is it going to be, you know, how is it going to be pushed, marketed, who is it going to reach, how it's going to be reached. Because, like, man, some of the most slamming music was not celebrated. I don't know if you know who Nick Drake is, but he's one of my favorite songwriters. And his music was not celebrated when he was alive, and yet now it's celebrated way after his life. Mozart, same way, you know? So it's like, there's a certain level of like, you know, we have to make peace with first making the creation. That's the exciting part. And then secondly, there are limits to like what independent musicians can do as far as marketing. And, you know, while we also make a living, while we're also hustling in the circus that is the music industry. So, but man, what you guys created is extraordinary. And I think that alone is what you should marvel at, because it is great musicians making great music with great arrangements, great players, great songs. I mean, that's a win-win. You know, that's a musician's band right there, you know?
Yeah, they're all just great guys. And, you know, I just wish we could have toured. And like I said, maybe someday.
Maybe just like an LA baked potato show every 2 months, something like that on off days where everybody's not touring would be enough. You know what I mean? That's a start.
I'd be into that. Maybe some of the other guys would be too. I'm not sure. I haven't even, you know, it's hard to get a hold of Ethan. It always was, though, even when we were recording the album, he was like difficult to get a hold of.
Right. So,
I mean, the other guys, you know, Jeff is like the busiest piano player in town, basically.
Right.
He's got Jimmy Kimmel every weekday to work with. And then he's, you know, he takes tours once in a while. Like, he subs for Larry Goldings. So he'll go out with James Taylor. And last year he was playing in Steve Gadd's band. So he toured with them.
Crazy. And he was also with, I saw him last with Colin Hay. So I talked to him like maybe like a couple months ago because I want him to do a Sight and Sound. And first of all, I also want to say we just mixed and mastered episode 9, which you are featured on with Cock Marshall Trio. And man, your playing is ridiculous. It's just so great. It's just like your soloing is insane. People don't know, they haven't seen it yet because we're only rolling out episode 6. But man, episode 9 is coming, and I can't wait for people to hear what you throw down on that episode because it's just awesome. You just sound great.
I can't wait to hear it too. I have no idea what I played.
Oh, it was great. It was great. And you know what? What I love too, it's like, especially with saxophonists, it's amazing what you guys throw down in a moment, a solo. It's like, I kind of find it really remarkable. I mean, I hear so many guitar players, and I love guitar. I'm a guitar player. So maybe it's because of the allure of it being a different instrument. But when I hear what saxophonists play, the vocabulary is just a different thing. It's a little bit more rhythmic. It's a little bit more nuanced. It's a little bit more kind of it can go out in a way and come right back in a really sharp way that when it's done like that on guitar, sometimes it doesn't hit me in the same way. But saxophone is just like, man, when you phrase things in certain ways, it's just kind of remarkable. I like always marveled at how saxophonists play, and you definitely have a sound and a vibe when you play in solo. It's really great.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel like sax needs to have a renaissance. Like it needs to have a comeback now because it's kind of been out of pop music for so long. It's weird when you finally do hear it in a song now. It's like, I don't even know if people know what that instrument is anymore.
Right. Well, people are dumb, but you know what? It's like, it's not because it's not the coolest instrument. Cause like you have to know that saxophonists always have like a cool vibe. There's just a cool thing with saxophone players. They just always have like swagger. So it's just, they bring that, whether, you know, it's hip and pop music or not, it doesn't matter. It's just, I think it is about awareness, and it is about like artists kind of like taking chances. And, you know, I love horn sections. I love all horn instruments because there's not a song that has a horn section or a saxophone or a trumpet or a trombone that it doesn't add something to it. It always adds, it never takes away. So, you know, I think there is a resurgence of some of that coming back, and it just takes kind of certain artists to kind of bring it back. You know what I mean? So I think you should never stop creating. Let's play one more. I want to play one more song of yours. This is a cover song. This is Arthur's Theme, right?
Yeah. So I just did this tour with What the World Needs Now, which is a Burt Bacharach tour tribute. And we had a ringer with us. It was Todd Rundgren. He sang probably 7 or 8 songs, and I did about 6 songs myself. And then we had Tori Holub as one of our singers. She sang a lot of the songs. She's an amazing young singer and from Minnesota, actually. And then we had Elise Trow on drums and vocals, and she's great. She did a really good job. I was blown away by her, too. So Elise Trow, she's from San Diego, and she's got a lot of followers on Instagram, but that's how they found her and Tori, is through the internet, and they're very talented. And it was really great because they hadn't really done live performance much. It was mostly internet stuff that they had done, but they really blossomed like on this tour. They both got, I mean, they're just great.
That's awesome.
And anyway, then we had a couple other great players, Kenny Dickinson on keyboards and Probin Gregory on multiple instruments. And from Utopia, we had Kazem Sultan on bass. And then our musical director is Rob Shirkbari, who was Burt Bacharach's musical director, and also Dionne Warwick for a long time. So he had really knew this music inside and out. And anyway, one of the songs I got to sing was this one, Arthur's Theme. And it was originally sung by Christopher Cross and has saxophone solo that I played pretty much verbatim by Ernie Watts from here in L.A. And he still plays every once in a while at the Baked Potato and places like that.
Crazy.
But he was a heavy session cat back then. And this is one of the solos he played halfway through my song.
Well, let's hear it. Here's Arthur's Theme.
This song was a big hit for Christopher Cross. It was an Oscar winner. You'll remember this. Once in your life, you find someone who turns your heart around and makes you know you're closing down the tunnel.
You, if we want to have you play on a record or a session or a performance, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Facebook, and or you can find me on Instagram. Those are probably the easiest way to find me.
What are your handles, or is it just Woody Mankowski at Woody?
Oh, I have a YouTube channel too, but. Yeah, I think it's just Woody Mankowski for Facebook and Mankowski Woody on Instagram.
Love it.
I'm more apt to reply if you find me on Facebook.
Well, I'm going to have you playing with the NK band a lot more. I told you that. We actually just played with Rebirth not too long ago, and I was like, we got to get Woody. That stage is just too small, but you're going to be playing a lot more than NK Band. Don't worry. And you're definitely coming with us to Wisconsin when we play Summerfest, because that's your home turf. So we're not playing this summer. We're playing next year. But okay. I'm going to have you play a whole bunch of shows in between then. So we are super tight with you and, you know, you with the band. But, man, thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. I can't wait for the world to see you playing with NK Band for Sight and Sound Episode 9. And, man, you're such a heavy cat, such a great musician, great guy.
Thanks for having me on the show. This is nice.
Of course. We're going to have you back in about 9 or 10 months, okay? So keep the music flowing. On behalf of Woody, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Peace, love, and hair grease. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.